The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. In this episode, we will continue to dig deeper into the January issue of Our State magazine, featuring articles all about an old-fashioned winter in North Carolina. Old School Cool. Friendly faces greet travelers at a mom-and-pop general store on Beach Mountain. A club in Wilmington knits worn socks and blankets. Sledders slide down favorite hills from the high country to the Piedmont. Across North Carolina, these time-honored traditions tell us that winter has arrived. And we have a picture of an old-fashioned sled, wooden sled with the handlebars that guide the sled. And then on the other photo, we have a picture of the Max Patch in Madison County. It says a walk at Match Patch, Max Patch at Madison County, amid the stillness and beauty of a frozen landscape, is a one-of-a-kind wintertime experience. And every frond, every branch, every leaflet is covered in snow and ice, and it just looks like a frozen paradise. It's beautiful. And we see a family walking along with a dog in the side view there. Our first article is called On Top of the World. At an elevation of more than 5,000 feet, Fred's General Mercantile is among the country's highest such stores. And for generations of Beach Mountain locals and visitors, it's where they go to get everything they need. And in Beach Mountain, where the annual snowfall average is nearly 63 inches, Fred's General Mercantile helps its customers prepare for a winter full of skiing, sledding, or simply staying in and keeping cozy. And in our last week, we talked about the pole outside the door of Fred's Mercantile that measures snowfall for each year, snowfall totals, and that is evident in the picture. And there's posters about fishing and licenses, and there's an old lighted Gulf gas pumping station there, and a place where you can get some air for your tires, it looks like, just all sorts of things. It's blue, and it has wooden doors and a porch leading up to it with sleds on it and tools and shovels and things like that. More than once, a black bear has wandered into Fred's General Mercantile on Beach Mountain, by which we mean on Beach Mountain. At more than 5,000 feet above sea level, the store is only a few hundred feet below the mountain's topmost noggin, tucked into a curve of the Beach Mountain Parkway that ferries skiers and snowboarders and mountain bikers and hikers towards some of North Carolina's most popular Blue Ridge adventures. Since Beach Mountain is the highest incorporated community east of the Mississippi River, then surely Fred's is the highest general store and breakfast stop and lunch deli in the right-hand side of the country. But back to those bears. During a recent incident, one slipped through the side door, swiped a bag of jalapeno kettle chips, and bolted back outside. There, the Bruin opened up the snack bag and tried a taste, then tossed the bag aside as if to say, "Who in the heck eats jalapeno kettle chips?" It came back into the store for a second try, but bears can't read. It picked up a bag of the same flavor, chomped on a few chips, and then left again, sauntering into the big woods behind the store. In the 45-year history of one of North Carolina's most iconic general stores, that bear was one of the few disgruntled customers. Fred's opened in February of 1979, not quite 2 years after a pair of Beach Mountain lovebirds named Fred and Margie were married. They brought an exquisite high country pedigree to the place. Fred Fole had worked as director of ski operations for Beach Mountain in the winter. And in the summer, He'd managed the Land of Oz theme park. His new wife, Margie, had been a Beach Mountain summer resident. The couple met while working for the local recreation department, guiding canoeing and backpacking trips. At the time, Beach Mountain was an out-of-the-way place as you could find. Getting a hold of practically anything meant a long, winding, and sometimes dangerous drive down to Banner Elk. One day, Margie was in need of a can of tuna to make a casserole, and the only one Fred could find on the mountain was an overpriced tin in a local convenience store. With that single can, the seed for their business was planted. They sold two houses and everything else they could put a price tag on and opened Fred's General Mercantile. From the beginning, it was all about the community. Neighbors helped stock the shelves the night before the store opened. The place was designed by Jack Pentis, the mastermind behind the beloved Land of Oz. Tin-roofed and wood-floored, the mercantile creaked and groaned, a wood stove at the center pumping out heat and gathering customers close by. The store was part fairy tale and part crazy dream, but also part of a well-considered business plan. And for folks living and visiting along the crown of the Blue Ridge, it was a godsend. Fred's General Mercantile has never closed, not for a single day. My visit occurred on the 45th year, 5th month, and 20th day of business. At the time, the store had been open 16,607 days in a row. I pointed out the calculation to Fred, who sat on a wooden barrel and greeted a steady stream of customers. He ran a hand across his thinning, reddish-gray hair, shook his head, and grinned, "No wonder I have a bad foot." Here's a random sampling of what you can buy at Fred's. Yahtzee and bacon. Most anything you need to cook, most anything you want for breakfast, lunch, or supper. Hard candy and soft taffy. Deer corn and bird seed. Toilet bolts, wrench sets, and shop vac filters. Pacifiers and pancake mix. Hiking boots and heirloom garlic, grown above the 4,000-foot mark in elevation. And a plastic protractor. When was the last time you saw a plastic protractor? For $1.59, you can take one home. You can get a key made. You can buy a fishing license. Buy a pail and fill it with fresh fishing worms. Gawk at the snow pole out front that keeps a running tally of how much white stuff falls each year. If your toddler gets antsy, as toddlers tend to do, they're welcome to work the big red button on the front counter, which starts a G-scale model train that runs on an elevated railroad track overhead. You can walk out with local honey and Boring Castle sauce from Greensboro. But if you want a pie, homemade apples, say, or Toll House chocolate, chess, and pecan, you'll need to give a two-day notice. Here's what's in perpetual short supply at Fred's, and as such, items are rarely stocked. Surly attitudes. Folks in too much of a hurry. People who don't feel like they're blessed to have found such a place. In 1 hour of old-fashioned, good, clean loitering, I met a cross-section of Beach Mountain residents and visitors. A fellow who was buying fishing worms and wanted to show off photographs of a 20-pound snapping turtle he recently caught. A local paramedic who stopped in for milk, eggs, and waffle mix. A woman who wanted a selfie made with Fred that she could show off to her friends back home. She simply could not believe that Fred was right here in the flesh at Fred's General Mercantile. It's not like time has stood still at Fred's. Fred is a very savvy businessman, and he can change with the times. The store no longer sells camera film or rents DVDs. It used to sell the Sunday Miami Herald that came on a Trailways bus to Banner Elk and was in the store on Monday mornings. People thought that was amazing, Fred said, but that was before Amazon Prime. The most difficult change of all by far was losing Margie in June of 2020. Margie was the heart of Fred's, the bedrock, the foundation. Fred is the first to admit that. Whenever most of the employees went out on a volunteer fire department call, Margie held down the fort at Fred's. When half the staff was out building hiking trails across Beach Mountain, community service was encouraged by the Foles. Margie stayed back with her hand on the wheel. She loved the store like family, and she treated the store like family, always there, ever vigilant. We always steered clear of things you didn't want your children to have, Fred says. Margie was the overseer of that. Rolling papers, toy guns, toy knives, nope, nope, and nope. She didn't even want to sell National Geographic, he chuckles. Some of those pictures just didn't sit right with her. After Margie passed away, it was hard. A hard time and a bad, bad time. For a while, some of the spirit and soul seemed to have left the store, but only for a while. These days, it seems Fred's customers show up with goodwill and cheer, bringing both up the creaky wooden steps and past the snow pole and the front porch full of vegetables in season, giving back to Fred's a bit of what the old store has given to them over the years. Fred and Margie's daughter, Carol Spazzato, has long been a Fred's fixture and now has come to work full time. She helps manage the store and bakes pies and brownies and cookies. She's the one you'll need to talk to about getting a pie baked on the quick. Early in the morning, I'm there when the first of the breakfast crowd arrives. It's a classic Southern breakfast diner spot with a major difference. The mix of accents is hilarious thanks to Beach Mountain's popularity among out-of-staters. Around their usual table sits Bob Hanrahan, a Floridian originally from Massachusetts, Dr. Jeff Fabry from Tampa, Jay Kiz from the west coast of Florida, Jesse Small originally from New York and then Miami. One thing they've all learned in their time down south, they can hoot and holler with the best of them. And there's Jim Brooks, a real estate broker with a trim white beard and soft spot in his heart for Fred's. And for Fred, Brooks has been a broker in Beach Mountain since 1971 and has been pals with Fred since they met in grade school in Greensboro. After Margie passed away, Brooks was an anchor in the group of locals and Fred's regulars who checked in on Fred and who continued to be there for the man who's always been there for Beach Mountain. In the summers when we first got here, Brooks says, there wasn't anything to do up here but be friends with your friends. So you learn to be nice to everyone. Such a welcoming attitude is a hard thing to bottle up. It'd be hard to put that in a box or a basket, to put a price on it and line it up on a shelf, but it's there at Fred's, somewhere on the other side of the little die-cast metal toy trucks, over by the pickled quail eggs. Keep looking, right there in front of you. Hospitality and good cheer, they're always in stock. They'll never sell out of that kind of stuff at Fred's. And Fred's General Mercantile is located at 501 Beach Mountain Parkway in Beach Mountain, and they have a website, fredsgeneral.com. Now I'll go back to the front of the article and tell you about a few of the pictures here. We have a picture of Fred with a snow shovel, and there's a little picture here of Beach Mountain Resort. After Beach Mountain Resort was established in 1967, Fred Full above saw a need for the essentials among the growing number of visitors and residents. He and his wife Margie opened Fred's General Mercantile in 1979. And now we have a picture of the, looks like the little, I guess it's sort of the checkout area, where he's checking out somebody and all the different things hanging on the store, on the shelves and such. There's a weather station on the roof that reports daily temperatures, precipitation, humidity, and high winds in Beach Mountain. There's another a picture of another customer picking out some socks and a picture of that snow pole. It tops out at 138-inch snowfall of 2010. And he keeps adding to that every year, or adding the labels every year. And then we have a picture of Carol Spazzato, the daughter, holding a pie and some cupcakes. And we have a picture here of Margie and Fred holding out greeting customers with a plate of goodies. We also have picture, a distant picture of the store through the trees, snow-covered trees. And there's a sunroom in the backside deli, Fred's backside deli, where people gather to eat. That looks like a lot of fun they're having there around the table. Our next article is entitled, See You on the Slopes. With a little help from the instructors at Appalachian Ski Mountain and the confidence of youth, the journey from Bunny Hill to Black Diamond is short and sweet. We have a picture here of first-time snowboarders Tomas and Nico Ramirez Perry. They are snowboarding at, looks like some they're young children, and they're getting ready to do some snowboarding at Appalachian Ski Mountain in Blowing Rock. And then we have a picture of like an aerial drone footage showing the ski lift and about five different runs coming down into the area. So it took some explaining, this we'd never gone skiing thing. The questions piled up. But your kids, they're surf rats, right? Skate rats? They're the ones turning full twist front flips at the pool. And don't all four of you practically live outside? I don't know why, was always my answer. I never skied as a kid, so it's not baked into my DNA. Go to the beach and I'm ready to surf. But in my relationship with the mountains was always hiking, distance hiking even. Or better yet, curling up after hiking, a fire in the fireplace and something on the stove. Even living within with a day trip distance for the boys' entire lives, we'd never gone skiing, not once. Maybe it's the fact that the boys were little until they suddenly really were not. But just look at them now, these surfer boys. They go fast and crash into anything boys. These boys who love snow days, love sledding, love winter. Can we go skiing this year, they asked. Yes, we said, let's just make sure we have the right... Wait, what do we even need? We go to Appalachian Ski Mountain because it's close, because it's good for a first time out, a friend tells me, which seems ominous. The view from the parking lot is certainly ominous, to some of us anyway. The slopes look very much like they run right down the side of an actual mountain. I point out to the boys who are like, sweet! I repeat this to my wife, who's also like, sweet, because although she's from Miami, she went on a teenage ski trip to Colorado and walks around with a quiver of competencies that apparently includes downhill racing. I need to mention that after a winter in the Piedmont that was barely a winter at all, it's pouring snow and blustering on the mountains. I need to mention that I have a fear of heights that's about to intersect with a chairlift. I need to mention about how very, very lost I feel. That doesn't last, though, because inside the lodge, I find that surfing is very much the correct analogy, or at least the correct community. I know these people, I think, as they outfit us with boots and helmets and bibs. These are people who want to be outside, who want you to be outside. These people see you, a person who'd like to ride something in the great outdoors, as, quite literally, a fellow traveler. The people are kind, the people are generous, the people are practical. They check my boys' helmets carefully, not wanting to bring into question any of the scenarios we've signed away in the waiver. They check mine, too, which is good. After my lesson, though, I can ski almost right away. I cannot correct for speed. I cannot turn. I cannot stop. I'm so sorry, 4-year-old girl, who I will ski right through, multiple times on the bunny slope. Oh, and the boys, you ask? The boys are gone. Later, when they're less gone, they'll tell us that their instructor, in his infinite wisdom, the very cool French-Swiss ski college on site, provided separate instruction for parents and kids, actually held his coat out like some sort of cloak to shield them from the fiercest snow and wind. This instructor also, once he figured out who he had on his hand, left the bunny slope immediately. By the end of their hour, the boys are snowboarding a black diamond slope. Of course, it was snowboards, and of course, they had it right away. There are not words sufficient for me to explain how much they loved it, but this is a magazine story, so let's try. By gone, I mean, we don't know where they are on the mountain except for when they come to sliding perfect stops at the bottom of whichever slope they're riding. Shout a breathless, goggled hello and goodbye, and then go flying back off to ride a lift a quarter mile up to the dark. They go and go and go, bro. Bro, they tell each other, that was so sick. Orchard Run is so sick. Let's go up to Upper Big Apple. And they do, 1,000 times until it's time for us to leave. There is, as it turns out, a correct amount of snow for a ski mountain evening. Measurable, but not so much as to make the road's minivan impassable. We head back down the hill to Blowing Rock, where the Meadowbrook Inn has not only accommodated our request for a rollaway, but also provided a bottle of champagne for our après-ski. I pick up dinner from the town tavern, the only place still serving food this late, and where there is a full bar karaoke contest underway. We picnic on the hotel floor. We get our blanket situation squared away. We fall asleep as though shot down the side of a mountain. The morning dawns, or whatever the right verb is for 10 a.m., cloudless, a high blue dome, and new snow, and a day moving from below freezing overnight to 45 or 50 degrees by noon. Back on the mountain, the bros are immediately gone. Of course, pro bros who know exactly how to open our locker and clip in and helmet up and ride the lift toward grave danger. The gravest danger is their favorite kind. They've gone native. Never want to leave. We'll ask once a week all the way through next June when we can go back. Both are suddenly considering App State for college. Add ski rat to the list of rats, please. And what sort of rat will I become? Last night, my wife and I stuck to the bunny slope, but this morning, a slightly steeper hill with a motorized handle pull is mostly empty and beckoning. My wife rides up the pulley, then gracefully shaloms back down as though she's been doing it her whole life. I take my fear of heights to the top of the hill and execute a breakneck straight line downhill run that ends in a pretty spectacular crash. I now understand the term breakneck, though I am mercifully unbroken. A stranger, how many times have I done this for other kids in the ocean, even for other parents, takes pity on me and suggests one or two things I could do to not die, but rather to ride. To be rather than to seem, if you will. Ditch the poles and ride down with your hands on your knees, he says, and it works. Magically, I can turn, sort of. I can slow down, sort of. At the bottom, inches from some safety netting and some kind of rock-filled ditch, I even stop. And here come the boys, rocketing past me from a neighboring slope, and one of them pays me the ultimate compliment. Bro, he says. And then to his actual brother, he all says, bro, pointing at me, meaning, I think, look, Daddy's doing it. Back up the mountain they go. I loved it plenty. My boys loved it so much that even after I got it, figured out my own skis, and mostly stayed at the bottom of the hill, aching to sight them as they came around the curves at the top, to watch them glide down like experts, effortless, catching air on the bumps, and cruising into long, sliding stops. We tried to take pictures, videos. We tried to remember our days up there as best we could. My memory, though, is of them being gone, then getting found, then getting gone again. They were so very at home. As soon as it's cold enough again, I tell them all summer long. Do you promise? Asks my little one, that nickname not really sticking to him anymore. Yeah, bro, I tell him. I promise. Appalachian Ski Mountain is located at 940 Ski Mountain Road, Blowing Rock, North Carolina. And you can go to their website, is appskimtn.com. Appski, M like Michael, T like Tango, N like November, .com. Next article is The Sound of Wild Ice. In winter, when the weather is just right, water turns ethereally symphonic, if you stop to listen. Most of us can hear the hush of snow at least every once in a while, or the creaking of leafless branches moving against each other in the winter wind. If we listen, we hear the patter of animal feet on dry ground at night, the air cleared of katydids and crickets until spring. Only a few of us, however, get to hear the otherworldly sound of wild ice. Most of North Carolina doesn't get cold enough to freeze streams and ponds for any significant length of time. When ice and snow do come south and east, it feels like an alien takeover. We cancel school, hunker down, don't dare drive anyplace. Ice and snow turn us into spindly-legged fawns, scrabbling around for purchase. And like fawns, we hear the world with new ears. The first time I heard the sound of wild ice, I was a teenager exploring a swamp with my parents on Sunday afternoon. Most Sunday afternoons were reserved for going to the woods. In Wayne County and throughout North Carolina, hunters were prohibited for killing on the Lord's Day, so we were free to look and wander even during deer season. It had been unusually cold that year. The swamp streams and puddles were covered in a layer of ice, something I'd never seen before and hadn't seen since. When we stepped on them, the ice split, resonated like plucked steel cables. The cracking layers sounded like laser guns, like whales singing to each other in the ocean depths. The second time I heard wild ice, I was 20 years older, throwing rocks and pine cones in a frozen pond in Durham with my two sons. None of us had seen a pond frozen over before. I'd moved far enough away from that swamp in Wayne County that I thought it had all been a dream. But there it was on that pond, the preternatural chords reverberating in the winter air. Ice in glasses tinkles and cracks. Crushed ice shushes and grumbles. But wild ice, the ice no human can make, the ice that covers streams and ponds and lakes, has its own language. When bodies of water freeze, especially in warmer places like North Carolina, they don't usually freeze solid. Instead, they leave the river and pond beneath to slosh. The lid of ice, stretched taut like the head of a drum, rattles the water below. It cracks, sends vibrations deep down and above. These vibrations make sounds, the twangs and croons of wild ice. We're in the perfect place to hear those sounds. In colder climates, when the water gets too frigid, the ice becomes too thick to vibrate, too heavy to move. It silences any water beneath. We don't get too cold. Most winters we get just cold enough for wild ice to sing. It hums and moans and shoots and warbles. It turns the heads of phoebes and squirrels, and they too wander over the weary refrains of water that once splashed and trickled. These animals don't know the whale calls. They've never heard a laser gun. In the movies, for them, it's just the music of a frozen day. Well, that sound means we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and this broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. For questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. And so long until next time.